Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State beat writer, and this is Double Coverage, all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss for the next half hour or so. This is a production of the Daily Journal. We're glad to be with you. Logan, how are you, man?
Doing good, Parrish. Got to actually see you last week. It's a rare occasion that we talk every week, obviously, but you know, we don't ever get to see each other, so it was good to see you up there in Oxford. And I guess the season ended, football season ended for you, and it sort of continues for me. I was kind of looking forward. You know, I wrote a column last week saying that I was looking forward to, or I guess it was this week, I'm looking forward to getting in the woods and doing some deer hunting during the month of December. And doesn't look like that's going to happen very much now, you know, with Mississippi State continuing its season for a bowl, you know, with a 5-7 record, kind of surprising.
Well, let's talk about that in a little bit, Logan. Before we get there, folks, I want to remind you about some other podcasts you need to look for. Good work from the Daily Journal. Check out our news podcast, The Memo, all things Northeast Mississippi, with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, coming to you every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And check out Prep Rally, all things high school sports, with Gene Phelps and Blake Morgan. That's coming to you every Wednesday. And Logan and I are here with you Thursday or Friday, give or take, depending on what's going on with the schedule. Schedules are transitioning right now, Logan. We got that email from John Pitts earlier in the week telling us to be aware of the art hole, be aware of the centerpiece. What can we do there? So it's that time of year. You know, football's a given, man. There's a lot of structure in football, whether it's the high school season, the college season. You know, John Pitts has that all planned out and knows what he's putting in that centerpiece each day of the week during football. But this is that different time of year. Tell us a little bit about, just update us on Mississippi State's bowl situation.
Yeah, right now it's kind of all up in the air. It's really weird. Kind of waiting to see what Navy does at this point. Navy still has, I think, two games remaining and could kind of get into that Cotton Bowl. And, of course, the Army-Navy game is not played until next weekend. So, most bowl announcements are expected to be made this upcoming Sunday. Well, there's still the Army-Navy game that has to be played, and that could affect everything. And if that is the case, Mississippi State, if they waited two more weeks to find out what bowl they could get into, right now one of the bowls that is looking like the bowl that Mississippi State would go to is the Las Vegas Bowl, and that's on December the 17th. So they would have, you know, less than a week, from the time the bowl announcement's made to the time, you know, the bowl's actually played. So it'd be a very, very shortened bowl practice and transition to all of that. So I'm really not sure how all that would work if that's the case. I don't know. Everything's kind of just up in the air, but that seems like one of the bowls that State could go to is the Las Vegas Bowl on December 17th. They've also seen a few projections for the Heart of Dallas Bowl, which is on December 27th. So that's another one. There's the Armed Forces Bowl. I've seen that one as well. That would be on December 23rd. But that's kind of the main three that I've seen. But I've seen probably Las Vegas and the Armed Forces Bowl more so than anything. And if Navy doesn't get into the Cotton Bowl, they would play Navy in the Armed Forces Bowl on December 23rd, if that's actually the case. So a lot of things are still up in the air, kind of the same situation they were, you know, going into Saturday. Didn't know, you and I talked before the football game, Parrish. We didn't know which one of us would be doing anything in December. And it could have been a case where neither of us was doing anything in December, but it looks like I'm going to have to continue with football season for a little while longer, and we just kind of have to see where things play out from right now. You know, still a lot of question marks still up in the air.
Here's a question for you, Logan. If it is the Las Vegas Bowl where Mississippi State would end up, and that's a December 17 game, as you mentioned, could State go ahead and begin this bowl practice, or do they have to wait until an invitation is in hand. You know, we hear these coaches talk all the time about, you know, that's the real benefit. You know, they talk about these extra practices and how that's like a miniature spring training and working with young players and all these things. But State's not going to get the benefit of that unless they start early if they end up in that Las Vegas Bowl.
Yeah, I don't know, Paris, and it's one of the things. Obviously, if they were at six wins, they could go ahead and start preparing. You know, they're going to make a bowl. I mean, it's mathematics, so I don't know if they can go ahead and start practices, you know, for whichever bowl they're going to go to, or if they can hold practices for after the bowl. And I don't know what they would do in that situation. This is totally new for me. I mean, obviously, covered a lot of bowl games over the last few years, but never been in this type of situation. So everything's sort of new to me as well. And even, you know, talking to Dan Mullen leading up to last week, he wasn't familiar with a lot of the scenarios and stuff. He was learning kind of like we were, trying to figure out, you know, everything that's available. You know, as far as I know, you know, don't have heard much from the football office about that kind of stuff. I mean, they're out recruiting right now, and that's kind of been their focus over the last few days since the Egg Bowl, is to go out and recruit and get on the road while they can before they have to start doing bowl practices. But, you know, in years past, Dan Mullen has spent pretty much the entire first week of practices just working those young players. You know, the veterans are kind of there, but they really sort of stretch, and then they're off the side for the rest of the practice while the young guys are out there. And then that's kind of the benefit for this team right now. They were so young this year. A lot of young players didn't get an opportunity to play because their games were so close. They didn't really have any blowout games where, you know, some of those redshirt freshmen and first year type players got out there on the field very much. So there's a lot of players that need some extra reps, and that's where this bowl practice is going to help. But I'm not really sure how it's going to be structured and how they're going to get that accomplished.
Well, let's go back and look at the Egg Bowl a little bit, Logan. This is the first time we've been together since that game. I thought it was a toss-up going in. To start with, in Mississippi, you know, you think Egg Bowl year-round, and so you're always kind of looking at the other team from the from the perspective of how do they match up when the game finally comes around. When the season started, you know, I thought Ole Miss was a heavy favorite in that game. Then Nick Fitzgerald got his feet under him, and you could see that Mississippi State offense improving. And I thought that window became a little tighter then. And then all of a sudden, Chad Kelly gets hurt. You see this Ole Miss defense is not improving. You know, by the time the game came around, I thought it was a toss-up, Logan, and it looked like that even in the third quarter when it was 27-20 and 4th-and-1. And then all of a sudden, Ole Miss just fell off the radar. It looked like there was no desire, no energy. They were not with it for the rest of that game. And they were never when they were with it. They were not able to stop Nick Fitzgerald, Aris Williams, and the MSU run game. You know, that's a matchup we talked about in advance, and knew that was going to be a challenge for Ole Miss, slowing that run game. I thought State would have a lot of success. I didn't believe necessarily that Nick Fitzgerald would run for a school record. I didn't know that was coming. I thought Ole Miss would have a chance to make some plays against the MSU secondary, but basically in a matchup of two bad defenses, State's defense outperformed Ole Miss's defense.
Yeah, and they didn't outperform them by very much. Just looking at the stat sheet, I mean, Ole Miss gave up 566 yards. Mississippi State gave up 528 yards. So they still gave up a lot of yards. The difference was Mississippi State's defense played well in the moments that it had to there in the second half. You know, like you mentioned on that 4th-and-1 play, they just made plays at big opportune moments, you know, and they didn't play well throughout the course of that game. But in moments, they actually had a few moments throughout that second half that really kind of changed the momentum of that game. And, you know, like I said, both offenses were picking up pretty good chunks of yards throughout the day. But, you know, it was Mississippi State's defense that kind of made the difference there in just a few plays that kind of changed the course of that ball game. That 4th-and-1 play was huge. I mean, you and I were sitting next to each other in the press box, and we were kind of discussing, you know, what Hugh Freeze should do in that situation. And I think we both kind of agreed that you kicked the field goal there. I mean, obviously, Gary Wunderlich is one of the best kickers in the SEC. And you take the points right there when you can get them. I mean, it's the first drive of the third quarter. I mean, there's still a lot of football left to be played. And like you said, Mississippi State's defense isn't exactly a world beater out there. So there's going to be more opportunities to score in that second half. But, you know, he went for, you know, to tie it up right there, try to extend that drive some more, and I guess got a little greedy, and he didn't get it. Mississippi State gets the ball back at that point, drives down. They convert a 4th-and-3 play of their own once they get on Ole Miss's side of the field. And that 4th-and-3 play goes 36 yards for a touchdown with Fred Ross. And that was kind of the backbreaker. I mean, you lost a lot of wind out of the stadium on the fourth down conversion that didn't happen on one end of the field. And then when you give up a 4th-down play for a touchdown on the other end, Mississippi State was just kind of able to cruise from there. I thought all the momentum swung to that sideline and it stayed there the rest of the ball game.
Yeah, all of a sudden, you've got a 14-point swing there, and you know you're going to keep giving up points, and you see the clock running down, and you know, and I think it was over for Ole Miss at that point. Now, the 4th-and-1, I wasn't surprised that Freeze went for the conversion there. He had mentioned earlier in the week that he believed to win this game he had to score touchdowns and not kick field goals. That's kind of been the problem for Ole Miss this season. As in Freeze's words, the offense has declined, and I would agree with that. They were not playing, they were not as explosive at the end as they were at the beginning. Now, a lot of reasons for that. You can look at the injuries along the offensive line, injury at quarterback. You know, you got a freshman coming in, although Shea Patterson played well in the 3 games, and I still think pulling the red shirt off of him was the right decision for Ole Miss. Overall, it just was not the same offense. You know, Logan, I've never bought in a lot to the idea of the catchability of a pass from a given quarterback. I know they arrive different ways. I know there are differences in the velocity and location and things like that, but I think it's on the receivers to make plays. And it's especially on the receivers at Ole Miss because that's a talented group and, you know, to whom much is given, much is required. You know, this group needed to make plays to support a freshman quarterback, and they didn't do that against Vanderbilt, and they didn't do that against Mississippi State. They did it enough against Texas A&M in Shea Patterson's debut game. But you look at Patterson's numbers, you know, this is a freshman coming off the bench cold in the 10th game of the season, and he throws for over 300 yards twice. You know, had the receivers been average, maybe a little bit more than average, then he probably goes for more than 400 yards, you know, in one or two of those games. Certainly they win the Vanderbilt game if they don't have all those drops, and, you know, if they make some plays, or at least they're in it. Certainly they give themselves a chance, but you know, Shea Patterson's got a lot of growing to do, as you would expect for a true freshman. I thought his 3 games were pretty good. I think his accuracy will improve. His 53%, I think, low 50s, maybe mid-50s completion percentage will get better as he works as the number one quarterback with these receivers over time. But these guys could have played better. I think it's still a very talented group. It's a group that doesn't change much. Quincy Adebojo being the only senior, you're going to return, you know, a lot of guys with a lot of production. You lose Evan Ingram, a very talented tight end, the number one tight end in the nation. That won't be reflected in the postseason awards because he was not a finalist for the Mackey Award, which is kind of stunning. But, you know, this is a guy who leads the nation's tight ends in receiving yards. Huge playmaker for Ole Miss this season. Had he played in the Egg Bowl, it would not necessarily have made a difference in the outcome, but I could see him getting the 70 receiving yards he needed, 70-some-odd yards to pass 1,000 on the season. Anyway, great player, Connerly Award winner. They're going to lose him, but they've recruited well at that position. They're going to lose Adebojo among the receivers, but again, they've stockpiled some talent there. I think as those guys work with Patterson, I think people got a glimpse of the kind of quarterback that Shea Patterson can be, and he's going to live up to his recruiting coverage, Logan. Lots of times five-star kids do not But I don't think that's going to be the case with Shea Patterson. I think he's going to be a very good quarterback, and they're going to be good on offense next year. If you take that offense for Ole Miss right now and spin it forward, you lose one starter on your offensive line that was beaten up at the end of the year, guys playing out of position. You've got a lot of young guys who got a lot of snaps this year, Greg Little, Alex Givens. And then that's another position where they have just really recruited hard, and they redshirted four offensive linemen this year, some four-star guys in that mix. So, I mean, they're going to have some depth there next year. They're going to be better at running back if they can avoid injury, and they didn't this year. You know, assuming that Eric Swinney comes back from the ACL, that's going to be his second major injury, so that's something to keep an eye on. Jordan Wilkins will be back. You know, they're going to be good on offense again next year. The question for Ole Miss is going to be, can they improve on defense? And they're going to have a new coordinator. We still don't know, you know, where that is right now. But that's kind of, you know, how Ole Miss shapes up going into the offseason. Patterson played well. He'll get better. I think they have a chance to be good on offense next year.
Yeah, for Mississippi State, some interesting news that's happened kind of since the Egg Bowl is at quarterback. I mean, obviously, Nick Fitzgerald has established himself as the starter at that position this season. And that was kind of a big question mark going into the year. They had four guys competing for that spot, Fitzgerald, Damian Williams, Elijah Staley, and Nick Tiano. All those guys competed throughout the spring. Nobody won the job. They competed all throughout fall camp. And, you know, they run Nick Fitzgerald out there for the first two series in the opening game against South Alabama. He goes 3-and-out both of those series, and then Damian Williams plays the rest of the game. So even going into week two, Mississippi State had no established starter at quarterback, and now Nick Fitzgerald may be the only scholarship quarterback left out of that group that goes into the spring. Damian Williams announced right before the Egg Bowl that would be his last game in maroon and white. He put that out on Instagram. Obviously, Elijah Staley transferred out back in August to a junior college out in Texas. He transferred to Tyler Junior College. And then on Wednesday, Nick Tiano, the redshirt freshman, announced that he was going to explore some other options, is how he put it. I was told that, you know, Tiano would still be with the team for the bowl game. I'm not sure what Damian Williams' plans are. I don't know if he's going to go ahead and transfer immediately. I do know he graduates next week, so I don't know if he's planning on moving on from that or what. But, you know, Tiano's going to be with him throughout the bowl game, but he's going to explore some options. And just reading his statement that he put out, doesn't seem like he'll be back. So he wants the chance to play. Obviously, I was really high on Tiano. I thought he was going to be Mississippi State's quarterback of the future and had a chance to beat or compete with Nick Fitzgerald for that starting job going into next year. I mean, he's that good of a player, but he only got one series the entire year out there. He played at the tail end of the Auburn game when they were at clobbered there in the fourth quarter. So that was really the only series he got at quarterback. He was their holder for the last few games with Logan Cook being hurt. But that's going to give him an interesting dynamic. Obviously, Nick Fitzgerald has earned the starting spot. I don't think there's any question as to, you know, who's going to be Mississippi State's quarterback moving forward. But they have some pieces to work with on offense. They're going to lose Fred Ross, and that'll be a huge loss. They'll lose a few offensive linemen as well, center Jamal Claiborne, Devin Desper, and Justin Senior as well. So they're going to lose three pieces on the offensive line. They got some young talent out there that they're really developing. Some of them got to play throughout the year. Martinez Rankin established himself at left tackle. Elton Jenkins kind of moved around at some different spots. He interchanged with Rankin at left tackle and kind of settled in there at left guard. They'll get Deion Calhoun back. They'll get Darrell Williams back. Those guys were both banged up late in the year, didn't play the last few games. But they got some talent. You know, Aris Williams really established himself at running back. And, you know, that's kind of something you were looking to see throughout the year. You were always impressed with when Aris Williams ran the football, but he just didn't seem like he got the ball enough throughout the year. And that kind of changed when Brandon Holloway got hurt the latter part of the year. It kind of increased the carries for Aris, and Aris made the most of them. He really came out there and shined. I mean, he ran for over 100 yards against Texas A&M. He nearly rushed for 200 yards against Ole Miss in the Egg Bowl. So he's going to be their running back moving forward. They've got some young guys that they like at that spot as well. Dontavian Lee, who carried a little bit the last 2 years. They got Nick Gibson, who finally got out there. Alec Murphy. So, yeah, they've got some guys that they like at running back moving forward, even though they're losing Brendan Holloway and Ashton Shumpert at that spot. But defensively, State's got some question marks to answer, too. I mean, they're getting a lot of those guys back on defense, but how do they adjust to that 3-4 scheme? It just didn't seem like it worked most of the year. I mean, they gave up a ton of yards, but all those young guys that struggled in the secondary should be back. So we'll have to see how year number two goes.
Shifting gears, Logan, we got a few minutes left. Let's talk a little basketball. A disappointing loss for Ole Miss Wednesday night against Middle Tennessee. Look, this is Kermit Davis Jr. A lot of people around here are very familiar with him. He's been very successful at Middle Tennessee State, including last year when they upset Michigan State in the NCAA tournament. He's got a lot of talented players back for that team. And look, they've played Ole Miss a handful of times through the years, and the Rebels just have not matched up well and have not performed well against Middle Tennessee. But at no point have I seen them less engaged and energetic as they were in the first half Wednesday night. Final score was 77-62, Ole Miss losing to Middle Tennessee. But Middle was up by 29 points at halftime, ahead 48-19. That's just way too big a hole to dig out of. And you watch this team right now, Logan, and going into the season, there was cautious optimism because they have some athleticism and they have some different parts and pieces. But, you know, you got transfers, you got guys who have not played together, and there are some chemistry issues right now, some communication issues. And frankly, you've got, two who are your lead guys here in DeAndre Burnett, the transfer from Miami, who at least was in the program last year and sat out a year, and Cullen Neal, the point guard, transfer from New Mexico, a graduate, so he comes in and is eligible right away. You know, this team was going to focus on Sebastian Saiz, a senior, your big guy down there, on the low block, Andy Kennedy saying he was going to run some offense through Saiz this year. But the fact of the matter is, it's hard to run offense through your center. You know, that's a position where a defense can collapse, and it's easy to take that guy out of the game. So you're not going to always be able to get the ball down there to him. And Kennedy's teams, for the most part, have been guard-oriented anyway. And what you have right now is nobody really taking over. It's like you have a bunch of wingmen with no pilot. And we've seen Burnett and Neal do good things at different times. And I really thought coming back from the Paradise Jam and the Virgin Islands that this team might have turned a corner out there. And that's why their effort in the first half against Middle Tennessee was so surprising, because they had played well against number 12 Creighton and had really led that game for more than 23 minutes or so, before eventually losing by 9. Now, they won two other games out there and did some good things on a neutral floor. Thought maybe they were turning the corner, but really they just fell behind against Middle from the get-go, and still struggling with turnovers. They had 14 in the first half. Kennedy overhauled his first five, started a completely different group to begin the second half. The energy was better, the mistakes were fewer, but the hole was too large. And another challenge for the Rebels coming Saturday at noon when they play at home against Memphis. One thing to keep an eye on coming out of that Middle Tennessee State game is Cullen Neal may really be pressed for his minutes at point guard, given how productive freshman Brian Tyree was in the second half. He ended up playing 16 minutes, 11 points on 4-for-6 shooting, and really he just gives Ole Miss something that Neal doesn't, and that's that burst to get to the basket, to get the ball to the rim. Neal just doesn't have that. He's a shooter. He can find the open guy. He's an adequate passer, but he's not going to get to the rim and create, and that is something that Tyree offers. So we'll see how Andy Kennedy divides those minutes at point guard moving forward, and if Tyree can take this Middle Tennessee performance and turn it into a launching pad for him, so to speak. So I know we're actually producing this on a Thursday before Mississippi State's game against Oregon State. But tell me a little bit about the Bulldogs, what you see there.
Well, right now they're 4-2, Parrish, and really it's been a new season the last two ball games because Mississippi State lost its leading scorer and overall best player, Quindary Weatherspoon. He's supposedly out for the year with a wrist injury that happened while Mississippi State was in Charleston, playing in the Charleston Classic. He actually played a game after he hurt the wrist and did pretty well in that game, but they came back to Starkville, got an MRI, and, surgery was required. He was going to miss 6 months of action. Going to be able to redshirt this year and start it all over again next year, I guess. But, for Mississippi State, without Quindary Weatherspoon, it was basically, like I said, like starting a new season over because he was so good at so many different things and led that team to me. When they needed a shot, the ball went to Q, and now you got a lot of freshmen out on the floor and nobody really knows what their role is or who's going to take over the scoring. So, and we've seen it in both games against Lehigh and Northwestern State since then. State's 1-1 since Quindary Weatherspoon got hurt. But it's been the same thing in both games. Scoring lulls. I think they had a 9-minute scoring lull against Lehigh. And I think they were, when I forget what the run was, but it was like 16-3 or 18-3 or something like that. And, they just dug, kind of like we just talked about with Ole Miss, they just dug themselves a hole that they couldn't climb out of. IJ Reddy is Mississippi State's only upperclassman on the team right now. And IJ is a pass first point guard, and he's trying to get other people involved early on in the ball games. And those freshmen just aren't knocking down enough shots right now. And IJ has kind of been looking to score in the second half, and he's led Mississippi State in scoring both of those games, but he only had like one basket in the entire first half of both of those games. So he's scoring a lot late, but they're going to need more scoring production from him if some of those freshmen don't come on. And another thing that was discouraging, Parrish, before the Northwestern State game on Monday, Lamar Peters, Mississippi State's freshman guard, he started the Lehigh game. He moved into the starting lineup after Weatherspoon's injury. He overslept a 6 p.m. game, Parrish. I mean, he didn't show up for warm-up drills, and 50 minutes before tip-off, Ben Howland sends a manager to Peter's dorm just to check on him, just to make sure he was okay. And he got to the dorm, and the kid was asleep. So Howland just told him to stay there, and we'll have to see what his status is tonight. If his suspension goes beyond one game, he's already been suspended one game already previously this year. So they played 6 ball games, and this kid's been suspended twice already. So we'll have to see what that situation is moving forward. Another encouraging news was Xavien Stapleton, who's coming off his second knee injury since he's been at Mississippi State, is back practicing now. He's back practicing 5-on-5. They expect to get him back here in a couple of weeks, and he's going to be a real boost because he plays that same wing position that Weatherspoon did. So he's a transfer from Louisiana Tech. He's a Mississippi guy. He transferred in last year, was practicing with the team towards ACL, had surgery, recovered, was practicing with the team again over the summer towards ACL again. So been bad luck since he got to Mississippi State, but if he can get back on the floor, that would be a really big lift. Poor Mississippi State, who's hurting for some any type of scoring right now, and they've got some talent on this team, but they're the second youngest team in the entire country. Bears, out of 300 and something Division I teams, Mississippi State is the second youngest, and they look like it at times.
Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage, a production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Be sure to check out our news podcast, The Memo with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, and our high school sports podcast prep rally with Gene Phelps and Blake Morgan. Brad Locke's in there as well. He's everywhere. And Logan and I will be back with you next Thursday or Friday, but we'll be back with you late in the week for all things Mississippi State and Ole Miss on Double Coverage. Come join us.